Good afternoon, members and guests. We've reached the appointed hour for our committee to start, so we're going to go ahead and get started. We do not have a majority at present moment, so we will not call the committee into official order until a majority arrives. But we have quite a bit of information to cover today, and so I would the first agenda on the item calendar today is a presentation by House staff regarding state debt capacity. Just what are the guidelines and how would they look at the present moment? So go ahead and please introduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Andrew Lee from House Fiscal Staff. I'll be going over the current debt capacity forecast, which is in members' folders, and also do a bit of a overview of all the different components of state debt and some historical perspective of how much state debt the state has had over the last couple years. So I'll start with the page or the handout in your packet from the Minnesota Management and Budget that is the February 2015 debt capacity forecast. And if you turn to the second page, it explains the three debt management guidelines. Just to briefly go over them, the first is that total tax-supported principal outstanding shall not exceed 3.25% of state personal income. And so what this effectively means is that the debt that the legislature
has... Excuse me, Mr. Lee. I just want to make sure we're all on the right page, because I'm not.
Certainly. If you go to the Minnesota Management and Budget Memorandum on Debt Capacity, it looks like this.
Thank you.
And on the second page...
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Lee, for us that are a little slow on getting our papers organized.
So then, Mr. Chair and members, effectively what debt guideline number one means is that the principal of the debt that the state has authorized and that has been sold, so what the state is currently paying debt service on, cannot exceed 3.25% of state personal income. And the state personal income number is an estimate that Minnesota Management and Budget receives from IHS Global Insights for forecasting purposes. Then Guideline 2 includes all of the debt in Guideline 1, but also has some additional items and include authorized but unissued debt, so meaning that debt that the legislature has authorized but that hasn't been sold yet and that the state isn't paying debt service on yet. Moral obligations and equipment leases, and most of the moral obligations are in the the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. And then the third guideline is applies to general obligation debt and states that 40% of GO debt has to be paid off within 10 years. And 70% has to be paid off, 40% within 5 years and 70% within 10 years, and that the total term of the bond cannot exceed 20 years. So in a sense, general obligation debt gets paid relatively fast compared to like a 30-year fixed rate fully amortizing mortgage. There's a bit of a difference in that the state pays more principal upfront rather than what a 30-year type mortgage would have been. So then, going to the last page of the debt capacity forecast, there's a table that explains what the current debt capacity is. And you'll see a line right at the bottom, towards the bottom after total all obligations, there's a line that shows the estimate for state personal income, so that's all the income in the state combined. And then what the percentage of current principal outstanding. So that's, if you go back up, total tax-supported debt, that's the eight $1.172 billion. And so what you have, the difference between 3.25% and the current tax-supported debt is the guideline one capacity. And that is where it says below total all obligations, the third line down from that estimated maximum additional principal capacity for all tax-supported debt at 3.25%. And that's $688.9 million. So what this number means is that the principal can't go higher than that. But in terms of the legislature making decisions on the size of bonding bills and, you know, what, how big would max out that limit, this is not necessarily advice to the legislature of do not pass a bill larger than this, because this is a point-in-time look at state debt. And when the legislature authorizes a bonding bill, it takes a number of years for that authorization to actually be sold. And it depends on the project. It depends on the cash flow needs of all the projects that were issued. So one way of thinking about this is the legislature could authorize a bill that is much larger than $688 million and not hit the guideline. The flip side is that if there's a lot of authorized but unissued debt, and just hypothetically the legislature authorized no bonding bill, but all of the debt came to call in the next bond sale, then the state could exceed the debt limit without ever issuing more debt. The other variable in this is growth or decline of state personal income. So just to reiterate, this is not advice to the legislature on the size of a bonding bill. But in trying to understand how big of a bonding bill the legislature could pass, I've requested that MMB prepare a memo that goes through this, and it's also in your packet. Looks like this. It's titled Managing State Debt Capacity. It's prepared by Minnesota Management and Budget. And if you look on the first table, towards the bottom of the first page, this is an estimate using the current the base scenario for the size of bonding bills that the legislature is forecasted to pass. This is not, you know, there's no recommendation from MMB to the legislature that it should pass bonding bills of a certain size, but MMB forecasts for the sake of trying to predict future debt capacity and debt service payments. So this table assumes that the legislature enacts a $220 million GO bonding bill in odd years and a $800 million bill in even years. And again, that's not advice to the legislature. That is just the forecasted base, based on 10 years of history of the size of the bonding bills that the legislature has passed. So you can see that the table shows the estimated guideline one capacity in the February forecast, which is what happened, and then going forward for the next 3 years. On the second page, there's discussion of the maximum additional size of a bonding bill that would essentially bring the state to the limit of guideline one. And so if you look at the top of page two, it shows that MMB estimates that it would be a $1.725 billion bill to essentially bring it to zero, bring guideline one capacity to zero in the November 2016 forecast. But I should note that on the final page, this assumes no additional trunk highway bonding and no additional new tax items are or new tax-supported debt items are authorized. So that's no additional appropriation bonds, lease purchase agreements, or trunk highway bonds.
Mr. Lee, I think this might be a good spot to just kind of reemphasize that it's not just GO and bonds that affect our limit. It's also trunk highway bonds, which do not go through this committee, but certainly do have a direct effect on the guideline limits. Could you just kind of reiterate that for the committee members?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. Yeah, all state debt affects the overall state guideline limits. But for the most part, the purview of this committee has been general obligation debt, and that's the debt that requires a three-fifths majority of both the House and the Senate to enact. But there are other debts that require only a simple majority, and those include trunk highway bonds and also appropriation bonds and lease purchase agreements.
And Mr. Lee, does that affect both guidelines, the trunk highway bonds, both Guideline 1 and Guideline 2?
That's correct.
And Mr. Lee, as I look through this sheet from MMB, it's my understanding that they're supposed to look out 6 years, and I only see 3 years here. Am I misunderstanding something, Mr. Lee?
No, Mr. Chair. Minnesota Statute 16A105 states that requires the debt capacity forecast, so essentially requires the first sheet that the committee reviewed. And in the last sentence, it requires that the forecast must show the actual amount of debt service at least the past two completed fiscal years and the estimated amount for the current fiscal year and the next six fiscal years. The debt service authorized and unissued and the borrowing capacity for the next six fiscal years. Now, while the debt capacity forecast shows the debt service, it does not show the borrowing capacity for the next six fiscal years.
Mr. Lee, did you request this information from MMP?
The memorandum, the second item, I did request. But the first item, the debt capacity forecast, comes out with each forecast in November and February.
Uh-huh. And Mr. Lee, did they give you an explanation as to why this information is not forthcoming?
I have not asked that, Mr. Chair.
Do we have any from MMB here that can inform us about that right now? Commissioner, would you like to step forward and give us an update as to what's happening here? Please introduce yourself for the record.
Myron Franz, Commissioner of Minnesota Management and Budget, for the record, Mr. Chair. With respect to the charts that Mr. Lee has been describing with great accuracy and good clarity, the chart on page 3 from the February 27th memo does show the forecasted amount out for 6 years, but it doesn't have all of the information with respect to the projected amounts, the bonding that might occur. We can certainly provide that information as additional information if you would like to see that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. We would certainly like to see that as soon as possible.
Just one question, Mr. Chair, and that would be, we would base that on the 10-year rolling average assumption. I'm assuming you'd want us to make that projection of future bonding based on what we've been seeing in the past.
Well, this is statutorily required, Commissioner, and I assume that you know how to do your work. And if that's the way you've done it in the past, then that's the way you should do it again.
Thank you. Glad to do that.
Thank you, Commissioner. I appreciate your coming forward. We do have a quorum here. I'll officially call the meeting to order. And Representative Vogel, would you care to approve the minutes of our last meeting on Thursday, March 5th? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. Minutes are approved. Mr. Lee, please go ahead with your testimony.
So then, Mr. Chair, I would ask that the committee members turn to the next item that I prepared for committee. It's a chart that looks like this. And this chart shows a history of the total principal outstanding in Guideline 1 against the debt capacity. So that's the top orange line on the chart. So essentially that is 3.25% of state personal income, and you can see it grows from February 2010 to February 2015, as does the amount of debt that's in the guideline. And you can see that the vast majority of that principal outstanding is general obligation debt. And in this, I don't make a distinction between GO various purpose, which is the purview of this committee, and general obligation trunk highway, because the two debt products, though the GO various purpose requires a supermajority of the House and the Senate to pass, and the trunk highway only requires a simple majority, Trunk highway bonding is paid out of the trunk highway fund and not the general fund. And also, the way that the debt is paid off is similar to, or is the same as GO various purpose debt, in that there's a requirement that 40% is paid off within 5 years, 70% within 10 years, and that the term can't be longer than 20. And they receive comparable interest rates at the time of bond sales. So that's the bulk of the debt outstanding. And then the next item up in the little blue line, or the blue box, is MHFA appropriation bonds, lease purchase agreements, and certificates of participation. So within this is, for those of you unfamiliar with lease purchase agreements and certificates of participation, this would be debt that the state owes, for example, to the St. Paul Port Authority to build the DHS and health buildings. And it would also include the certificates of participation to build the new legislative office facility.
Mr. Lee, those debts must be longer than 20 years. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, typically they are. They're between 25 and 30 years. And I actually, on my next sheet, have the final call, or the completion date of those debts.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. I'll try to be more patient.
So then, Mr. Chair, the next box is, in the maroon gold, is the University of Minnesota appropriation bonds. That's for the TCF Bank Stadium and the biosciences facilities. And then the next box in red is the principal outstanding from the debt product that is taken over for the tobacco securitization bonds. So in 2011, during a budget deficit, the state borrowed about $656 million backed by the tobacco settlement revenues. And then in 2012, those were resold as appropriation bonds rather than revenue bonds. And there was some savings in interest. And so that principle was applied towards the overall debt capacity. And then the final box that I'll note there in purple is the professional football stadium.
Mr. Lee, I have to compliment you on your choice of colors. Very appropriate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, and the one thing I'll just draw the committee's attention to is the number that is on the left-hand side, that is kind of in between the lines, showing the difference between the principal outstanding and the guideline. That's the capacity. That's essentially how much room is left. And then it gets a little bit tight in the February 2014 forecast, and then it's in bold above the guideline, or the overall guideline number. So you can see that it started at about $1.8 billion and is now $688 million. Then on the next chart, I show capacity for guideline 2. And this is a little bit more simple. So the bottom box is the issued debt. The next box up is the authorized and unissued. And then the next box after that is the MHFA moral obligations and leases and other items. And you can see this guideline, rather than being 3.25% of state personal income, is 6%, so it's quite a bit higher. And the capacity is also quite a bit higher. So then, to give a little bit more perspective on how long and how fast it takes for GO and trunk highway debt to enter into guideline one, so after it's been authorized, how long does it take to be sold? If you turn to the next page, this is a chart showing GO and trunk highway bond authorizations. So the total amount is how much was authorized. And then if you look at some of the older years, there are all the lines are kind of dotted, and those are the bonds that have already been issued. So we're already paying debt service on them; already been sold. And then the dark gray box is the amount of bonds sold at the last bond sale last year. So you can see special session 2011, specials are in 2012. You know, most of those bonds have been issued by now. but there's still a little bit left. And the largest, the larger one in 2014, at that bond sale, about 30% of the bonds were issued of the total authorization.
Mr. Lee, would a 30% figure there be normal in that first year?
Mr. Chair, members, it's my understanding that that's a little bit high. Typically, it's closer to 10 to 15% right after an authorization. But what that all depends on the kind of projects that are that have been authorized. So if projects are ready to go and need cash flow right away, then they would be issued a lot faster than, say, if a project needed, you know, engineering, construction, design work, and that would take several years.
So do you have an explanation as to why that's a larger percentage in that particular year?
Mr. Chair and members, I think I'd have to defer to MMB on that, although I could venture a guess that a piece of that may be the large authorization for the state capitol building, which is under construction right now.
I think I would probably agree with you, Mr. Lee. I don't think we need to check with MMB on that. Go ahead.
And then just on the bottom, showing the trunk highway bond authorizations. And so that large authorization, and note the scale on it's about double from the second chart down, that's about $1.8 billion in trunk highway bond authorization in the 2008 legislation. And there's still about a little under $500 million left of that authorization yet to be sold. And then on the back page of that handout, there's just that chart with numbers. So finally,
Just if we could back up to that trunk highway chart, bar chart on trunk highways. So debt was authorized in 2008, and the DOT has not issued those bonds yet. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and members, it's not necessarily. The bonds were authorized in 2008, but the actual authorizations was spread out over 10 years. So, in a sense, MnDOT could plan on how to use the bonds, but the actual their ability to sell the bonds, appeared over 10 years.
And is that related to the length of time it takes for some of these road projects to actually get ready to go? I mean, they have to acquire property and do EISs and all that fun stuff.
Mr. Chair, member, I'd like to defer to MnDOT on that, but I imagine that that would be a reasonable assumption.
We'll just assume that for the moment. Thank you. Representative Hausman has a question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just in response to that, I would think that's much like what might be proposed in the transportation bill this year, where they're proposing $1.3 billion in trunk highway bonds and $1 billion in GO bonds. I would assume they think of that over a 7 to 10 year period, because that's what we've been thinking of in terms of how the other approach, which was the tax increase, that would also be over a 10 year period. So I'm guessing this was calculated in the same way. We don't really expect what the majority is proposing. You don't really assume, even though it's on paper, you're not really going to authorize that entire $2.3 billion in 1 year.
2008 predates my tenure here, Representative, but not yours.
Well, I mean, Mr. Chair, what I'm talking about is what
right, I realize
what's proposed
that.
This year.
But to explain.
Oh, I see what you're
the,
saying. Yes,
unissued bonds. But I think we're on the. I think we're getting a pretty good understanding of that. Mr. Lee, go ahead.
And then, Mr. Chair, I would then turn to the last handout that the committee has. It's a legal size spreadsheet. And in the boxes to the left, this just kind of shows a summary of the first guideline, the second guideline. But then provide some additional detail for members of when the bonds were authorized, when they were sold, the year of final payment, the estimate for, or the principal at the time of the sale, the total interest cost, The payments to date, and the interest rates of the various debt products. And so I'll just note that the over the top, the GO various purpose debt and the trunk highway debt, this is the 2.83% and the 2.71%, those were from the last bond sale. So they varied as depending on the conditions in the market, but that's as of 2014, that was the interest rate.
Mr. Lee, are there ever circumstances where it'd be to our advantage to actually pay off high interest bonds and reissue them? Is that something that has ever been considered?
Mr. Chair and members, I haven't considered that. I'd have to, I think, leave that to MMB.
Okay. As a farmer, you know, I'm always looking for the lowest possible interest rate, because I borrow a lot of money.
And one thing, I, Mr. Chair and members, I would say on that is that MMB does get to choose the time that they issue bonds, and they check the market very carefully to try to get the best interest rate.
Perhaps, would someone from MMB care to comment about interest rates and timing, and if there's any potential in capturing more of this current low interest that's available?
For the record, my name is Kristen Hansen. I'm the Assistant Commissioner of Debt Management at MMB.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. In regards to doing refundings to take advantage of favorable interest rate markets, we do look at the market, you know, frequently to find out if we're in a market that's favorable to refund bonds. We typically do refunding bonds almost every year. The sale that we did in August, we actually refinanced some of the trunk highway bonds. The year before that, we refinanced some of the general obligation various purpose bonds. So we do that. In terms of the timing of the bond sale, we actually, from kind of a disclosure standpoint, we typically don't sell bonds in the middle of session because we don't know what the outcome is going to be. We also need to stay on about 25 days on either side of the February forecast, and so there's certain windows where we can sell bonds and when we shouldn't sell bonds. So we're kind of
very good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Vogel, Representative Vogel. Sorry.
Thank you. As long as we're talking on the interest rates, not sure who wants to answer, Mr. Chair.
Perhaps MMB wants to come back. She's getting her exercise.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. It appears that in the 2014, which was the issue for the new legislative building, the rate came in at 3.70, which for a, you know, it's 25-year bond, but it just seems in today's environment that would be a higher, you know, quite a bit higher rate than normally we might find. I'm just curious, is our rating affecting that, or...
Chair, Representative, good question. As you indicated, you noted that the bonds are 25 years in length. We issued them as level principal and interest payment, and when Mr. Lee was talking about Guideline 3, when we issue our GO bonds, we actually sell those over 20 years with level principal, so we pay them off quicker. So the structure is different, and then state appropriation debt actually carries credit rating on just a notch below of the state's GOs. So our GOs currently are AA1, AA+, AA+, Moody's, S&P, and Fitch, and so they have a lower credit rating, so AA1, AA. So there's a couple of factors contributing to that higher interest rate.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Could you kind of outline for us which of these major bond issues are appropriation bonds as opposed to GO, regular GO?
Mr. Chair and members, the GO are, on the long spreadsheet is just the first two items, the GO various purpose and the trunk highway debt. And then if you go down the U of M TCF Bank Stadium all the way down to the authorized but unissued pay-for-performance bonds are all appropriation bonds. And then the items further down, the certificates of participation and the new legislative office building, those are all either lease purchase agreements or or certificates of participation, which are essentially appropriation bonds. Maybe MMB can correct me.
Chair, just to kind of reaffirm what he's saying, so essentially on his long spreadsheet and also in that the middle section, page 5 of the debt capacity report, all of that debt is considered kind of appropriation debt. It comes with different names, but it's supported by a general fund appropriation.
Mm-hmm. And when we, you know, we talked earlier about the guy or the that we have to have a 20-year time frame that we operate in, is that an average then?
Chair, the question about the 20-year term is actually dictated by the state constitution for our GO bonds.
But some of these bonds are longer than 20 years.
Right. So there's been, obviously, in order for MMB to issue bonds or another entity to issue bonds with the state's credit, there needs to be special legislation. And oftentimes in the authorizing legislation, it gives a maximum term that the bonds can be.
And that's how we get around the 20-year limit.
Some are 20. Some have been, I think the St. Paul Port Authority lease revenue bonds for Freeman and Anderson were 25 years. But those aren't GOs. So GOs have to be 20 years, but the non-GOs can be longer.
So like the stadiums can be longer.
Yes.
Is that right?
Or based on the authorizing
or Senate office buildings can be longer and that sort of thing?
Yes, I believe those are 25 years.
Very good. Representative Vogel has another question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to follow up, so did you say that bottom tier is lease purchase bonds?
They're basic, Chair, Representative, I'm stealing his handout since I don't have it. So essentially, the rating agencies look at it as what's called tax-supported debt, which is essentially supported by a general fund appropriation. So the real estate and other debts essentially do qualify as some form of appropriation that's either getting passed through the issuing entity, whether it's the University of Minnesota or MHFA, or through another governmental entity to make payments on the debt.
Mr. Chair, just follow up.
A follow-up, Representative Vogel.
So just again, looking at that rate just seemed a little bit high. It wouldn't be because of the type of financing it was, other than it just moves it one bump down. In other words, the debt obligation itself is a debt obligation. It's not a lease purchase type transaction. It was actually a debt obligation.
It is a debt obligation.
Ms. Hand.
Chair,
thank you.
Representative.
And Mr. Chair, in one other clarifying piece of that is that GO Trunk Highway and GO Various Purpose are supported. There's a constitutional requirement that the state has to make a payment on those. That doesn't exist for the other products.
Very good. I would like to go back to the colored bar chart for a moment, and looking at guideline one, it seems to me that the various debts we've taken on have kind of narrowed that gap, and because many of those debts in the colored portions of the bar chart are longer term, that narrowing of the gap is going to carry forward for a number of years. Am I kind of reading that correctly? If either of you would care to comment on that?
Mr. Chair and members, I think one way to think about in response to that question is that GO Various Purpose and Trunk Highway debt stays in the debt management guideline one for a smaller amount of time because it's paid off a little bit faster because of the requirement that 40% is paid off within 5 years and 70% is paid off within 10 years. So the large amount, the $6.4 billion, assuming more bonds aren't authorized, will decrease at a faster clip than the appropriation bond debt because usually those are a flat rate, and essentially their impact on the guideline is that they stay on for longer than GO Various Purpose or Trunk Highway, if that starts to answer your question.
I think so. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess my question, in looking at these charts, it seems there are two things. One's glowing orange and the other one's glowing purple. And if we take the glowing orange and the glowing purple away, we're pretty much on par with what we've been doing you know, starting back in February 2010. I mean, the $462 million worth of debt for the stadium would greatly, almost double the current capacity under the guideline number one. Is that a correct assumption?
Mr. Lee?
Mr. Chair and members, just looking at the numbers.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for those comments. I'm sorry. Representative Vogel, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry, it's hard to put numbers in front of me and not get excited. I was looking at the annual debt service, and I actually had some copies made here. And as long as we're on the outstanding debt, maybe if somebody could hand these out so I could explain. I just did this sitting here, so my math is wrong. I'd apologize. But
Representative Vogel, some wise person once told me, never do math in public.
Yes. I'm not that wise yet, unfortunately. I already opened my mouth, so I'm sorry. But looking at page 3 and just looking at, and that's why I want to just see if indeed I had actually done this before and I couldn't find my paper to bring it, so therefore that's why I did it here. But looking at page 3, I totaled up on what would be a biannual basis, in other words, 2006 and 7 and so forth, down to 14-15, and now down to 2021, the annual debt service. And if you look at that handout, it would appear that we've averaged on the various purpose bonds about $714,000 a year from 2006 through the 13 year. And all of a sudden now in 14-15 it jumps to $1,242,000, and the forecast is pretty consistent, and then on the other side is all of the bonds together. So relative to the bar chart that we're looking at, where the debt doesn't go up anywhere near 50%, and that's where my question is, it appears that our debt service is more than doubled, but yet the debt itself has probably only increased about 70%, and not even 70%. Am I missing something here, or are we running into a cash flow squeeze the more we keep bonding?
MMB, would you like to, Ms.
Chair, Hansen? Representative, in looking on page 3 of the debt capacity report from February, there was one thing that was a little bit of an anomaly. So when the legislature passed the legislation to issue tobacco revenue bonds, those revenues were used to pay off principal and interest on our state GO bonds as part of the plan, as part of, you know, trying to realize some budgetary savings. And so then you see that kind of leap once, you know, that was for the biennium, and so then we went back to paying the normal annual, you know, debt service costs. So that explains kind of that anomaly. And then kind of we follow up.
Representative Vogel?
Well, Mr. Chair, but if you look at 2006-07 at 753, 8-9 is 862 and so forth, and all of a sudden between 12-13, which was 4-13, which I can see where there was an anomaly there between 827 the previous year, but that's why I did the average, then jumping up to $1,242,000. I'm just, as I've looked at this stuff, not just today, of course, but as we've been talking about it, my concern has been, are we, because we're deciding the amount of outstanding debt based on the amount of outstanding debt rather than the outstanding debt plus the cash flow needed to generate to pay that outstanding debt. And I just wanted to make sure we, if these figures are correct, that we're aware that, yes, the debt is going up some, but the debt service, which is the amount of money we have to allocate each year, is going up substantially more. And that's why the question came in. I could be wrong on these assumptions, but if the debt service was 753 for 2 years, 862, 827, 413, which averaged 714, then it goes up to $1,242,000, and it still stays that high out into 2021. Are we using the proper measures with just looking at total income a percentage of total income as the amount we should have outstanding, or should we indeed be also looking at how much it's costing the state in annual debt service cash that has to be allocated to pay the bonds?
Chair, Representative, so what I understand the question to be, should we be looking at different measures of affordability for our debts, for our debt?
Mr. Chair, yes. That would be that was my question here. Are we getting ourselves into a hole by issuing more debt, which is really increasing our debt service, the amount that we need to put into that fund each year, too significantly, and therefore we should be looking at this as well as this when we're deciding on the amount of debt?
Chair, we would be happy to look into that as a possible measure. The three guidelines were put in place in 2009 to align more with what the rating agencies look at, but we'd be happy to look into that.
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair, and also maybe give a little bit more context. Prior to the current guidelines, the actual measure for debt capacity was 3% of the state general fund for debt service, so that the debt service couldn't exceed that. So essentially that was more of an affordability restriction rather than a total principal outstanding restriction. So.
Very good. I don't see any other questions. Mr. Lee, do you have any final comments?
No, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for this valuable information. And Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do think that at some point in the next couple of weeks, House leadership and those writing the transportation bill and this committee should have a joint hearing where we talk about this, because I have to tell you, I've been sort of a broken record about some of these issues that are being raised, and that is the amount to which we are suggesting borrowing for transportation. We did it in 11-12. Prior to that, when Governor Pawlenty was governor, he proposed the tobacco securitization bond as a way to balance the budget. We had a hearing in this committee, and we showed that was a really bad idea, and we didn't do it. And then 11-12, we did it anyway. In 11-12, the tobacco securitization bond was how we balanced the budget one time, and it stays here. And this year, the House is proposing, in its transportation, we're missing that committee, that's at the same time right now, $2.3 billion of borrowing, $1.3 billion in trunk highway bonds, which would go above MnDOT's level, I believe, and $1 billion in general obligation bonding for transportation. For transportation, $1 billion. Now, because in this one guideline we quantify all debt, it ultimately affects what we're able to do for the kind of bread and butter general obligation bonding that traditionally we always did, and that I suspect many in this room are here caring about. Higher education, wastewater infrastructure, natural resources, corrections, veterans, that's a tool. That general obligation bond is a tool that is their only tool. In transportation, the following funding streams are available: gas tax, license tabs, motor vehicle sales tax, property tax, that five-county sales tax, wheelage tax, federal money, and fares. There are really eight streams of funding, and now some people are proposing to solve our transportation issue this year, let's go to a ninth tool, general obligation bonding for local roads and bridges. That does affect what we're able to do for higher education and all other state agencies. So I have just been this strong person to say we can't go there. We've got to be exceedingly careful about increasing the amount of borrowing we do for both trunk highway bonds, because that affects this, and if we use general obligation bonds in large quantity for local roads and bridges. So to me, the conversation we're having here is so important, because we have always taken our guidelines seriously. But what's happening in other rooms has potentially an effect, and I don't know if they're having the same conversation. So long story to my frustration as I see this developing in terms of how we are proposing the use of bonding in other parts of the budget.
Well, thank you, Chair Hausman. You know, there's certainly no effort on my part to duck any of that. I think we need, you know, we operate here with the lights on and the curtains open, and we will continue to try to evaluate all of this indebtedness appropriately. I think you might have left out the 10th stream that we're going to utilize some sales tax revenue to increase our ability to service trunk highway bonds. You're going to run out of fingers pretty soon. Representative Wagenius has a question or a comment.
I think Representative Hausman pointed out the folly of borrowing money for current operating expenses, and that's the red, the bright red that goes across here. Mr. Lee, could you tell us how long that bright red bar is going to last?
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, the tobacco securitization bonds that have since been refinanced and are now the state general fund refunding bonds, so on the long spreadsheet, line 8, the year of the final payment is 2030.
2030. Wow.
Representative Dean. Follow-up, Representative Wagenius.
I think... Well, if I could follow up, I think maybe Representative Hausman could help us out a little bit in remembering. I mean, these were called tobacco bonds, but that there are no real such things. That's just a fiction. We were essentially borrowing to pay current expenses. And there was much gnashing of teeth, is that fair to say? That shouldn't be done. We should never do that kind of thing, is to borrow to pay current expenses. And so this bright red bar is a lesson. Is that fair to say, Representative Hausman?
Representative Hausman, your name has been mentioned.
yes, I think, in other words, it was, now, as you know, we have refinanced those, so it's no longer, but the idea was we were going to borrow against that stream coming in from the tobacco issue, and that was going to pay the debt service, and it was not a good idea, and so I think it was refinanced as a better approach, but to use it as a one-time balancing of the budget, I think, was the thing that we're continuing to pay for.
Thank you, Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't know if this is to Mr. Lee or Assistant Commissioner. So, when we begin to max out the capacity guideline 1 or guideline 2 and actually begin to approach and go above that if we actually authorize it to happen, what is that going to do to our credit rating and our availability to finance debt at the lowest cost possible?
Chair, Representative.
Ms. Hansen.
The rating agencies will, you know, right now, they do look favorable on our management of debt, and so that's part of all of the things the rating agencies look at when they're looking at the creditworthiness of the state. If we start going above the guidelines, then, you know, they will, you know, look to us to see, you know, if we are able to manage within our guidelines. And so... that's one piece of all of the components that the rating agencies look at. Fitch and S&P actually, you know, say we have kind of a low debt burden. Moody's looks at it a little bit differently. They all look at it differently. But it would be something that they would look at.
Thank you. We're going to move on to the governor's bonding bill. I just remind everyone that we can't change history. We have to live with what we have on our plate. It's our job to look to the future, and that's exactly why we're examining these numbers carefully. Thank you both for your presentations today. We'll go on to the governor's bonding bill. I believe the commissioner is going to join us. You're bringing help?
Yeah.
Or are you on your own? All right. Please reintroduce yourself for the record.
Myron Franz, Commissioner of Minnesota Management and Budget. And I don't know if you have a copy of the handout, so we're going to put it on the screen.
We do.
You do? Okay, we do. I'll get started, and we'll go ahead and put it on the screen in the meantime. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, for giving me the opportunity to discuss the governor's bonding proposal today. The comments by Mr. Lee, his review was really helpful, and Assistant Commissioner Hansen and all the representatives and everyone talking about the way we look at bonding and debt is obviously someone's looking over our shoulder from outside our state, but obviously we have to look at ourselves and make sure that we do what we think is fair and accurate for the state of Minnesota, and I appreciate all of our roles in doing that. And so today what I'd like to do, with the chair's permission, is to run through the governor's bonding proposal, then we can talk about questions and concerns you might have.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner. And that's exactly what I had in mind, that we'd allow you to just go through the entire presentation in the interest of time and save our questions till after you're through the PowerPoint.
That'd be great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the first page gives the highlights. Obviously, the governor's proposed $842 million in bonding. This includes general obligation bonds, appropriation bonds, Minnesota Housing Finance Agency bonds. If you add all of the local match, the user finance bonds, the federal funds, and the local government and private gifts that go into these bonding proposals, they all add up to be about $1.2 billion in overall investment in these projects around the state. The governor's approach really is designed to emphasize, as you might not be surprised, higher education and economic development across the state. I think one of the things he wanted to do was to make sure that we continue to position Minnesota well for the future. We've got high priority state needs and specific concerns of local governments represented in this bonding bill. And the local needs sometimes are met through statewide programs and also in individual projects. But the budget framework really looks at $676 million for state agency bonding proposals and $166 million for state local government proposals. And as has been testified to, the bonding bill, if authorized at $850 million based upon the normal process of how we would issue these bonds, would fall within the state's debt management guidelines. If you look at the pie chart, you'll see that the $842 million is really divided up into about $360 million, or 43% in greater Minnesota, $321 million in the seven-county metro area, or about 38%, and $161 million that we've identified as state programs that are really all around the state that we think have statewide significance. But another way to look at the governor's proposal is, if you look at the next area, the list of governor's priority areas. So the $842 million is divided up into these categories for purposes of showing emphasis. The education area, obviously, as I mentioned, $211 million in education, which is about 25% of the total. Economic development, $169 million, or 20%. Parks and historic sites, or $124 million, or 15%. The environmental protection areas, $99 million, or 12%. In the corrections, public safety, and human services, about $97 million, or 11%. Rail safety improvements represent $79 million, or 9%. And the Veterans and Military Affairs represents $16 million, or 2%, with the other category about 6%. But let me just run through the major categories with just a brief introduction of some of the programs, and then we can have questions. In the E-12 education area, there's $11 million for bonding there to help expand the education facilities, especially at the Minnesota State Academies, early childhood education facilities around the state, the Purpich Center for the Arts Education of $2 million, and the library accessibility grants around the state of $2 million. In the higher education area, $200 million has been allocated or appropriated in this area based upon the governor's recommendations, $100 million for the University of Minnesota, and $100 million for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. In the University of Minnesota area, $70 million would be for this system-wide asset preservation of buildings throughout their campuses around Minnesota. $18 million would be to replace a veterinary isolation facility on the St. Paul campus. Another $8 million would be to design a state-of-the-art facility for the new medical school and academic health centers in the university campus, and $4 million to replace the St. Paul campus greenhouse. On the Minsku campus, another $100 million in general obligation bonds, $70 million for their system-wide asset preservation, which obviously is around all around the state, $30 million for particular projects at eight different campuses across the state, and these are designed to improve, in particular, workforce improvement programs, especially in areas of manufacturing technology, medical professionals, the STEM area, sciences, technology, engineering, and mathematics, automotive and heavy truck repair, and power line technicians are those areas that would be focused on in those eight different campus changes. On the next page, in economic development, there'd be $169 million of GO bonds. $50 million of this would be allocated to address housing needs around the state for moderate and low-income housing, as well as improving existing housing. $12 million would be for state programs specifically designed to help businesses expand in Minnesota around the state with competitive grants. Another $48 million would be to complete the Lewis and Clark Regional Water System Project in southwest Minnesota, and the $27 million for other local and regional economic development projects statewide. In the parks and historical sites area, there'd be $124 million allocated to this area. $34 million of it would be for a new visitor center at the historic Fort Snelling site. $23 million would be for improvements at DNR facilities, once again across the state in a number of different locations. $20 million for the additional repairs to the state capitol building that the Capital Preservation Committee recently reviewed or commissioned and recommended. In the environmental protection area, there'd be about $99 million appropriated in that area. $24 million for flood hazard mitigation projects around the state. $5 million for repair projects for dams. These are not dam repair projects, but they're projects for dams across the state. $20 million for conservation easements for the Federal Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program, CRP, that we're all familiar with around the state. And in the corrections and public safety and human services area, $97 million. This includes $19 million to construct a new inmate intake unit at the St. Cloud Correctional Facility, which is where all the inmates that come into the Minnesota Correctional Facility are processed through, and this is a really important addition there at St. Cloud. $14 million to repair the perimeter wall at the St. Cloud Correctional Facility, and $13 million for asset preservation around the state for different correctional facilities and human services facilities. In the rail safety improvement area, $79 million, and $65 million of that would go for four particular projects where there's highway rail grade separations in Moorhead, Prairie Island, Coon Rapids, and Wilmer. These already have been worked on quite extensively, and they have a lot of support and local match by the participating communities. Another $10 million to implement a state quiet zone program to help quiet trains through residential and other areas through safer crossings for cars. And $3 million for an oil train derailment and pipeline safety training facility at Camp Ripley, specifically designed for rail train emergencies. In the Veterans and Military Affairs area, $16 million, $11 million of that for asset preservations and renovations and new constructions at National Guard armies across the state, specifically including Owatonna, West St. Paul, Rochester, Litchfield, Wilmer, and in addition, some lead abatement issues for other facilities around the state at the armories, and $5 million for asset preservation at the veterans' homes across the state to help plan and repair. Also, the bridge at the Minneapolis campus, as some of you may be aware, it's an old historic bridge that's now been blocked off and needs to either be fixed or torn down. It's just not accessible right now. I think we also have a map that's been handed out, I hope, that's available to you. Yes, and which tries to, in another different way, try to show once again how the projects are dispersed around the state in the different regions. There are five different regions, or six different regions, that are on the map to kind of highlight different areas, partly because so much of the MNSCU projects are around the state, as well as DNR projects. So I think this map shows how the proposal includes projects around the state that we think would help and be important for Minnesota to continue its progress and to make sure that we keep things moving in a way that attracts business and make sure that our communities have the assets and services that they need. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to take questions.
Well, thank
you. That was pretty fast.
You went through a lot of money in a very short time. It's pretty
Mr.
amazing.
Mr. Chair, ever since I've been commissioner, I've got a lot more friends over at MMB than I had in revenue. So.
Before we get to some other representatives, did you break this as to asset preservation versus new projects at all? I haven't had a chance to do that myself.
Mr. Chair, if not, I can certainly do that.
And we can do it too. It appears to me at first blush that there certainly is a lot of investment in asset preservation in this proposed bill.
Mr. Chair, there is, yes.
Thank you. And just another quick question before I get to my colleagues. The state capital, as I recall, they were requesting more like $30 million. What specifically are you planning to cover with this $20 million, and what are you leaving out?
In particular, Mr. Chair, this relates to the concern about the water problem. One of the items that's been discovered in the restoration of this of the Capitol building is that in the front, the south stairs, there's some water infiltration problems there, and this particular big chunk of this money is designed to alleviate and specifically repair and refocus on those Capitol steps, the southern Capitol steps. It does not include some of the other. There's some artwork that needs to be done on the inside, which is typically cash and not general obligation bonds that they were concerned about. And there's some other smaller projects, but this is really designed primarily for the southern step water infiltration problem.
And the other issues as to, there was some interior painting that came up and some exterior security issues. They have not risen to the level of the governor's attention, or?
Mr. Chair, this in particular, what we felt that this was important while the perimeter of the Capitol was under such disarray and inaccessibility that it was really critical that the Capitol step infiltration problem be fixed at the same time that the whole building is being done. It was our feeling that perhaps next year we could tackle some of the other issues that remain inside the building. But it was really, we really believed that this was important to make sure that the entire building was accessible, and this needed to be done while we're still doing the major part of the renovation.
Thank you, Commissioner. I believe Representative Ertl has a question. I don't know if it's about parking or parking cards or something else.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for that reminder. I'll take that under consideration.
All right.
Actually, you asked most of my question, but I have urges to highlight some other things in the bill, but I'm going to restrain myself on that. And Commissioner Franz, just kind of continuing with where Representative Torkelson was saying, as a member of the Capital Restoration Commission, I'm glad that there is this $20 million for the repairs that you highlighted, but frankly, $33 million is what we were informed was needed, and I think I would like to see all of that done and committed at the same time, so that we have a $270 million investment so far in this capital, and the last thing that I would like to see is to reach the point where we shortchange something that should be done, and I don't want to sit in that beautiful Capitol and look up and see even a painting that doesn't look right anymore. Not that I would really know if it looked right or not, but I certainly don't want to see damage still there. So I would urge that we do the at some point here the whole $33
million. Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, I certainly appreciate your comments. I think it's I think we're all in amazement of how much work this capital restoration is involved and how important it is. And I must repeat my boss, my Governor Dayton's concerns, and that is that if this isn't the right bill, then help us make it the right bill, that he's clearly concerned and would like to see a bonding bill this year, and he's open to suggestions and to make sure that this is the bill that the legislature would be happy to pass. So to the extent we can help in that regard, we're happy to discuss that with you, sir.
Representative Wagenius has a question.
Can I make a comment first?
You can. It's a free country.
Okay. Just as a comment, I have enjoyed immensely walking through the construction of the Capitol and seeing these humongous blocks that were put in place to hold it up. And I am hoping that we are not covering those up and that the public will be able to see what went on 100 years ago to make this Capitol and to hold it up, because that was some absolutely incredible, and it's probably his workmanship. And so if there is any notion of covering up those gorgeous blocks, let's save some money by keeping them open to the public. They're just, people can't appreciate the history until they see what is holding up that building. It's gorgeous. So, I mean, it's also to see what our ancestors did for us. So, but my question actually is on asset preservation. And I appreciate a lot of asset preservation. However, I don't have any context here. And I think we need context. And let me give you an example. Well, first of all, like for higher ed, I know this is a rolling thing. Some things come on as other things go off. But I think we ought to be able to see what that rolling obligation is, how much deferred maintenance are we taking care of with this asset preservation, because we have no clue. I would like to say this is a great bill, but we need to have that context. I will give you an example in environment and in parks and trails. About 4 years ago, staff did a rolling look at how much obligation we had, how much deferred maintenance, how it would be paid off, and how we would do it. It would not be hard to update that for DNR to update that, because a lot of work went into the original historic putting it on. We need to understand what our asset preservation needs are, and that's what I'm asking.
Commissioner, would you care to comment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bagini said we'd be happy to put together all the background information to show where this deferred maintenance is going, both at the University of Minnesota, MNSCU, and some of the state agencies. I think that'd be helpful.
It would be helpful for us, to, particularly with Representative Hausman's comments, to see what our future obligations really are. And without that, I have no way of judging, and I don't think any member of this committee does.
Thank you. Representative Pawlowski has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a couple questions on the higher ed section and then an overall question. My question, Commissioner, on higher ed, why $200 million for higher education split evenly between the university and MNSCU would appear to be rather arbitrary. So can you explain to me why they would get equal amounts?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, I think the general concern has been that they both have large unmet needs, as we know, and they both need really more deferred maintenance than we've given them in this particular bonding bill. But I think the emphasis here was on trying to maintain a commitment to both systems, even though they're not equal in many ways in terms of number of students and number of facilities. But nonetheless, I just felt like we wanted to make sure that we treated both systems with as much support as we could at this time.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, I think your answer says you didn't treat them equally. MNSCU has vastly more students. It has a much larger physical plant. It goes across the state. The University of Minnesota has multiple bonding capacities, which we don't even deal with in this committee, and yet the university can leverage almost at will. They have the ability to raise money in the tens, the hundreds of millions for private donations, which MNSCU does not. And yet in your bonding bill, we treat them equally. I think by treating them equally, you're really treating the MNSCU system vastly unequally. And there are issues with the MNSCU system across the state, both in the HEPR amount, which I agree we should have an articulation of what that is, and then in the new projects. So my point would be, by this constant, and seems to be a pattern in the governor's office. In 2013, this was also done with his higher education finance bill. And we managed to convince the governor by the end of 2013 that these two systems were not equal and that they should be treated differently because they have different needs. And we want to make sure we treat everybody in the systems equally. So that would be my first observation. My second observation would be, it would appear you're not going to have a bonding bill this year. There isn't going to be one. So can you tell me how the governor's request or the governor's proposal in 2016 will change if there is no bill in 2015? By size, is it going to be a bigger proposal? And then how might it break down as far as where you're going to put the numbers in 2016? Because it would appear this body is not going to have a bonding bill in 2015.
Commissioner Franson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, you mean I'm here for no particular reason today? Listen, I appreciate your question, and I'd answer that in two ways. First of all, you know, I can't speak for the governor about what he may or may not do next year, but that really goes to the reason why the governor's proposing a bonding bill this year. We have the resources this year. We don't know what's going to happen next year. We don't know what shape the economy is going to be in. We're in a strong, growing economy. We hope it continues. But we do know that given the current budget balance situation, we do have the ability to finance this bonding bill now, today. And we do know that all these projects will cost more if we wait for another year or 2 years. And so that is part of the reasoning is we have the ability, the rates are still low, we have the capacity to pay for them, and we can save money by doing these projects now. With respect to what may be on the list next year, I think the governor's been pretty clear that you know, we're going to have to start all over next year because, as you all know better than I, the list of projects is going to be pretty enormous. If we don't do a bonding bill this year, then the list is just going to grow for next year. And I think his position has been, well, we're just going to have to pretty much start all over and see where we all end up next year if we don't do one this year. His recommendation is we do this bonding bill this year, take these good projects, get them done, and then that leaves opportunity for next year.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Blasch, your follow-up.
I appreciate your answer because I think that answer is relevant to why you are here today, to demonstrate the need, and the need is clear in multiple areas. And if something is not done this year, it will make it infinitely more complex in 2016. And I don't see how you can get by with anything less than what the total amount of the bill is. But then where you're going to put it in 2016 is going to be very interesting. I'm just going to use higher ed as an example, but certainly we could use asset preservation with the capital and other things that would be an increased amount. I know the chair is planning tours starting in August. You said that we're going to go around the state, and I think that will help articulate just what the size of the bonding bill would be in, or will be in 2016, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you for those comments, Representative Pawlowski. Commissioner, I would just like to delve a little deeper into one of the remarks you made, that is that the current budget surplus puts us in a position where we can do more bonding. That's really not my understanding. The surplus has not really affected dramatically our guidelines. Can you elaborate on that, please?
Mr. Chair, I was referring to the ability to pay the debt service on the obligations that we would enter into in a bonding bill. We do have it's about $78 million that would cost in this biennium to fund these new bonding obligations. So I was speaking to the fact that we do have the money in the budget balance to pay for the new bonding bill in terms of debt service. You're right, it doesn't affect the overall debt capacity. What's interesting, though, when you look at the forecast, and this kind of goes back to what's going to happen next year, all of these debt guideline numbers are built upon the total personal income amount for the state, the forecasted amount for the state. And we know that the forecasted amount, as Mr. Lee mentioned, was $272 billion for fiscal year 15. That's going to approach $300 billion in fiscal year 17 if, in fact, this recovery continues and our economy continues to go forward. We'll continue to pay things off. So, you know, it can go either way. We don't know exactly what's going to happen in the next few years. If things go well, we'll have additional capacity to do more bonding. But our point is we know we have the capacity now. We know we have the money and the balance to pay for the additional debt obligation service.
Thank you, Commissioner, for those comments. I do not have any other representatives on the list. I believe we have answered the questions for today. Commissioner, I thank you for coming forward today to present the governor's bill. We're always interested in what the governor is proposing. We will ponder these things in our own hearts, and at the end of the day, we know that during the biennium, we certainly will be doing some significant bonding. With that, members, we are adjourned for today.